We're in New York over the weekend and talking with Aaron Boone about him. I thought it was interesting what Boone said about him playing the outfield because he's already played 38 games there. That almost matches his total from the last 3 years. Boone thinks that that helps keep him healthy.
That ball is hammered to left center field. Goodbye! Two-run shot! Tie game! Right up to where he used to sit as a kid coming to games here at Dodger Stadium.
Hi, this is Emily Nyman, and you're listening to Breaking Balls. Welcome to episode 110 of Breaking Balls. I'm your host, Emily Nyman. I'm, of course, joined by my co-host, John Snyder. You can find us on Twitter, at BreakBallsPod. Or, if you're feeling brassy, give the Breaking Balls hotline a call. 631-820-7377. This is a very special episode of Breaking Balls. And not just because it's episode 110, or 110, as I insisted on the opening.
You said 1-0-10, so just for the record the first time.
Yeah, you guys are lucky that I was able to get that out. As you know, we have a new setup. We're outside, but now we are watching the All-Star game as we speak. This is what, the fourth inning?
We're about to find out as the score bug comes into view as I stall, as it does at the bottom of the third.
Bottom of the third. The newly crowned home run derby king is up to the plate, Juan Soto. And we are recording directly into FL Studio, and DJ Bingington is sitting right here. He is going to be forced to listen to the entire show, and he hates that. But this is really exciting because this like is a legit podcast, it feels like.
DJ Bingington, wave hi to the audience.
Wave to the people.
Hey, now he emotes.
I'm sure you could all see that.
And like, this is always what I've envisioned with Breaking Balls. Like, it was get. I always envisioned.
As you
us.
Said, that's what I've always envisioned. They did this split screen of Stanton and Judge on the game.
Oh, my God. Like, this is just a match made in heaven. This, because anytime you, like, watch, like, and I hate saying legit podcast, because not that this isn't. We put a lot of work into this for over 2 years. But, like, the podcast that, on Barstool or whatever, where you see the video on YouTube, and you see them sitting at like a studio table and they're with each other. And that was something that I always wanted for yes. our podcast. So I'm so fucking psyched that we have this right now.
Who just knew we wouldn't be able to do it indoors?
I know. Ironically.
No, but it's really nice. All right. So we got bottom of the third, Juan Soto up, 2-2, no out. Who's pitching? I missed it.
Framber.
Oh, Valdez?
Yes.
Okay.
Of Houston Astros fame.
Houston Astros fame. Before we get into it, I have to say, so they're doing like some of the promos they have. It's based on that, like, let's all go to the lobby. Remember that old jingle?
Yeah.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
And they did like some kind of photo shoot with them, like behind the concession stand at a movie theater. Like, you know, Mookie Betts is throwing popcorn and Shohei Ohtani's peeking between popcorn buckets. And Miguel Cabrera just goes full fucking weirdo. And he takes a ketchup container in one and a mustard container in the other, stares into the camera and just squeezes as a fountain of condiments comes up on either side of him.
As, you know, we all used to do at movie theaters as kids,
as
right?
As one does, yes.
I hope that someone who's way more graphically designed inclined than I am is able to Photoshop the videos of Nestor after any Yankees walk-off. Nestor always has a big bucket of, like, double bubble, and he runs out, like, jogs out slowly to home plate to dump it over someone's head. Someone needs to, like, Photoshop popcorn into that and then, like, add it just, like, makeshift to that montage.
I like that he's kept that. That was, like, the whole pandemic. We can't throw actual liquid on them, so what are we going to do? It's like, oh, bubble gum.
It is really cute the way he just, like, shuffles out there with it. Like,
yeah.
The whole team goes out, and then there's him just, like, shuff, shuff, shuff with the bucket. It's fucking adorable.
So a pretty good showing for both of our teams this All-Star game. Yankees got 5, Mets got 4. Maybe not the most impressive showing at the plate. You had 2 strikeouts. We had a hit by pitch. So, you know, we're...
Well, you know, it's...
Oh, you know what's ironic? Stanton is mic'd up right now, and you're missing it.
I mean, they should just mic up every fucking player. Like, I guess besides the ones that say they actually don't
that
want
would be,
to.
That would be chaos. Just everybody at the same time.
I mean, we managed to figure it out. I do love Stanton. I love... This is his first All-Star game as a New York Yankee, and I just love seeing him and Judge out there together. Speaking of Judge, everyone's favorite ESPN reporter, Marley Rivera, once again had the most awkward fucking interview of all time today.
Marley, did you know that I speak Spanish, Rivera?
Yes, that's the one. She was speaking with Judge, and Judge is like Mr. Buttoned Up. He never says the wrong thing. I mean, a few weeks ago, he transposed his words, and it sounded like he said best player on the team about himself, but he actually said best planet on the team, and he meant to say best team on the planet, but there was some controversy there.
No, you misheard me. I said something stupid.
Yeah, like, of all players for that to happen to, it was like the most humble guy who was like, anyway. So Marley's talking with him and just about all-star nothingness. And then she's like, I guess she was referring to her son. She's like, my son came home from school and was like, there's a chance that Judge may not be on the Yankees next year. So I didn't know what to tell him. So Judge, what should we tell fans, New York fans, about your chances of being on the Yankees? And he was just like, we got a lot of good all-stars on this team, a lot of good Yankees out here, like just totally glossed over. And she laughed about it, but it was so fucking awkward. Like, it was such a stumble. She stumbled into that question than I stumbled into the fucking retelling of it.
She sucks, as Manny Machado grounds out to first. He doesn't suck. That wasn't like a segue. Yeah, it was just what's happening.
You know what's kind of weird about these all-star uniforms? The fact that
look like the Royals uniforms after they won the World Series in 2015?
Not only that, but that the National League unis, they're obviously the American League is in the gray with the gold and National League's in the white with the gold. But the National League and the American League are wearing the same hats that match the American League's uniform.
It is a weird choice, yeah. And I will say, the American League, the dark gray looks way better than the white and the gold. I just don't like these home uniforms.
It's very similar to the unis that they rolled out. I think that was, 2019 for the Players Weekend, the black and the white.
Black and white, yeah. Which, again, the black uniforms looked awesome. The Mets got stuck with the white, and it looked bad.
Yeah. And speaking of looking bad, Shane McClanahan started this game for the American League and just got,
if you want to call it that,
absolutely lit up. I mean, he looked basically like he does when he throws against the Yankees. Everyone is very impressed with him until he pitches in big games, and then what are you going to do?
I mean, Paul Goldschmidt's doing Paul Goldschmidt things, so.
And I love Dusty Baker. He did the Dusty splice.
No, I will not.
Do the Dusty. Do the Dusty.
And Dusty Baker, and this is so fucking annoying, but I love it about Dusty because he said it about Shane McClanahan this time, that he's obviously the manager for the American League this year because they won the AL last year. And he was, asked about Shane McClanahan or whatever, and he just automatically says, I've never seen him pitch. He says that about every player. He's never seen them play, never seen them pitch. He has seen him pitch. That's besides the point, but I usually am annoyed by it, but this time I was like, hell yeah, Dusty.
Well, what's so consistently funny is how, we all know the players, they take it seriously in terms of, it's a cool honor. They're not taking it seriously in terms of, oh God, I gotta prep for this, we gotta win, blah, blah, blah. But the media wants it. They want that narrative so bad, and nobody did it better than Kershaw in the beginning when they're, saying, what's your game plan, going in? You've been prepping? And he's like, I'm going to go out there and throw as hard as I can. It's going to be about 91 miles an hour, and we'll see what happens.
And I think you picked up on it that Smoltz was basically saying that McClanahan has never pitched in a bigger game than this, the All-Star game.
Well, yeah, because his point was that he's and he's not used to this kind of pressure in one inning. And this is less than 5 minutes after he mentioned that McClanahan made his career debut in relief in the postseason. So it's you want to talk about one inning being important. The dude's been there.
You got to love Fox. We have the entire baseball world focused on this one game tonight. Let's just throw the worst fucking play-by-play guy or the worst fucking color analyst out there. Actually, yeah, I think Smoltz? I just shit on Joe Davis on accident. He's pretty good. But Smoltz,
Davis is Smoltz. It doesn't matter who Smoltz is paired with. He drags them down, and it's not a fun. This is the real reason why we're recording over this. We just don't want to listen to Smoltz. We know that we could do a better job.
I could be
narrating the Chevy commercial right now. It would be more entertaining.
The National League pitchers are throwing a one hitter right now. That's fucked up.
In the All-Star game.
Yeah, in the All-Star game. And I mean, to be fair, Manoa and Valdez, they haven't given up a hit. I mean, Manoa's out of the game now, and I'm sure Framber's out too, but neither of them give up a hit. Everything was just in that first inning by McClanahan.
Oh, so this is interesting. So going back to McNeil. So McNeil, Jazz Chisholm isn't playing, so McNeil got upgraded to starter, which is pretty cool. He's batting ninth. The disrespect. But anyway, First of all, there's no better way to represent the 2022 Mets than by getting hit by a pitch to keep an inning going. So that was pretty on point.
They did the thing.
They did the thing. But Manoah, so this is an interesting point of contention. So Manoah struck out the other three guys that he faced in that inning, two before McNeil and then one after McNeil. And they said that he struck out the side. I guess he technically did, but like that to me never feels like striking out the side. Like I feel like striking out the side is supposed to be three guys and you strike him out with nothing in between.
I feel like because striking out the side, it sounds like such like a power. It's like a power phrase. So I feel like that it does make sense to only use it when they strike out, you know, sit him up and down one, two, three.
Right. So to me, saying that like you struck out the side, but you also hit a batter is like saying that nine guys came up and you batted around. It's like, no, you didn't. You didn't quite get there. You know what I mean?
Another like baseballism that was, I don't want to say in contention, but thrown up for a question today to all the All-Stars. And I was actually surprised by how lopsided the results were, where MLB asked them, like, do you say play catch or have a catch? And I say have a catch and always have.
I think I do too, yeah.
And only like two of them responded have a catch. Cole, of course, took like 20 minutes to respond. They kept on like cutting back to him being like, like thinking on it like it was a fucking SAT question.
I feel like I'm definitely overthinking this, but I feel like saying you're playing something is something that you win or lose. And you don't really, I guess you could technically lose catch if you do a really bad job at it, but generally it's just something that happens. You don't really win or lose a game of catch.
Yeah, and
but then I did just call it a game of catch, and that didn't feel weird. So, I don't know. Semantics.
The conversation continues.
Speaking of semantics, so we're in the top of the fourth now. Jose Ramirez is up against Tony Gonsolin. And you got to say, Kershaw really came through because this was the whole, like, Gonsolin in my head probably should have been the NL starter, arguably. So it's like, you're going to put Kershaw up there on some legacy shit. Okay, you better do well. And he did.
Yeah.
So now I'm waiting for Gonsolin to get completely blown up in the fourth here.
And you know what? Good on Sandy Alcantara, too, because honestly, he could have been dubbed as a starter as well. The NL is so stuck with pitches.
Alcantara has been so good this year, man. We faced him a couple times, and he is just, ugh, what a stud. Well, that's the whole Marlins thing right now is, you know, their offense is whatever. They're pitching. They're going to be, I mean, they are already really good. They're going to be scary for a few years with that. Well, it's Miami, assuming they hang on to any of those players. Who knows?
Right. And also, like, scary is relative, I suppose,
right,
for the Marlins.
Right. Now, the other nice feature of doing this outside and the special All-Star episode is that we're taking things a little bit lighter here. We're having a couple adult beverages, you know, some other stuff. And
I love DJ Bingington. He has the headphones on. He is desperately trying not to pay attention, scrolling through his phone mindlessly. But all he can
do have to hear it again.
Is just listen to us in his ear. And it's going to be this way for like 14 hours tomorrow, too.
Right. Yeah, I mean, for the record, hey, maybe you don't know this. We don't smoke normally when we record. But it's the All-Star game. It's a party, right?
It is a party.
How do you feel about this ump cam that they're doing? This like mad shaky... It doesn't feel dedicated enough. You know, like, it's a cool angle, but the ump is obviously not thinking in terms of, like, oh, how's this camera angle looking at the ball? So the result is, like, some cool stuff and then some weird shaky cam, like NYPD blue.
To be honest, I like it just because I would like a catcher cam better. It's a bit steadier.
Agreed.
That I've seen, like, in a college ball. They've worn it before.
Mm-hmm.
I like it because you don't even need to have it on the whole game, but it gives really nice perspective because it gives just a perspective of, holy shit, this fucking pitching is coming in here really fast, and these pitches all look the same, but they clearly are different speeds.
Right.
And as a fan, I have been absolutely underselling how fucking hard it is to hit.
That is very true. Someone who it does not appear to be hard to hit. I could have said that better. Stanton's up. Stanton's up, people. It's one out. Top four. Stanton's up.
Quickly down 0-2. I just want... Just get a hit. Just get one hit. I really like... I like how the AL on the helmets has like a bit of like an Art Deco font to
it. I was just
going
to say, I like that they're doing that in the helmets. The AL and the NL. That's cool.
Oh, Stanton just fucking hit one back to New York.
My lord. Yep, that's Gonzo.
Lordy, we got a tie game here, folks.
How far do you think that went?
I'm going to say that went 414 feet.
I'm going to guess 415.
457. Oh, my God. Wait,
wow.
We undersold that
way
big
off,
time.
Way off.
Wow. I mean, I'm not surprised at all.
No.
That makes me feel a lot better. Oh, here we go. Here's the ump cam. Ooh.
See that? See, again, see the ump looks down and up.
Look at his face. That slow-mo. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Jeez.
Absolutely fucking cranked that ball 457 feet. What a monster.
Gonzo. See, and there you go. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why you have Clayton Kershaw start the All-Star game.
Exactly.
And not so many Gonsolin. I'm not saying that I saw that coming, because I didn't. All right, top four, one out. Now Byron Buxton is up with nobody on. Got a 1-0.
1-0. I love those fucking fluorescent cleats. Those things are so sick.
Oh, yeah, that is cool.
I feel bad for Gonsolin giving up the lead in front of his home crowd. Like, that does suck. I feel like it would be not as bad if they were in any other ballpark.
Yeah, he got shafted a little bit. They should have done 1-2. Clayton in the first, Gonsolin in the second, and then let everyone else deal with it.
Wow, Stanton hit that ball 112 miles an hour. It was obviously barreled, and it had a 1 expected batting average.
Now, I also have to be honest, I would be totally fine with no more runs being scored, because I don't know about you, I am rooting so hard for this game to end in a tie, now that they're actually going to do what they should have done the whole time and make this fun.
Oh!
And oh,
Buxton going back to
back. Did Buxton just get it?
He turns on a ball and hits it a mile. Byron Buxton puts the AL in front. 2 mammoth home runs. Stanton and now Buxton.
Woo.
Okay, the NL has some work to do. We got to tie this game up so we can get into the ninth inning with a tie game, and then instead of extra innings, do a home run derby, because it's supposed to be fun, and they're finally embracing some fun.
That derby last night was unreal. Can we talk about that for a second?
Oh, that was great. Well, no. Pete didn't win, so no. I will not be speaking about this.
And then I did love that because Pete was the reigning champ 2 years running, that they gave him a lot of camera time, so we got to see Pete, like, eyes closed backstage.
Yeah, Pete got, like, an inordinate amount of behind-the-scenes footage on him, like, just, like, lifting and meditating, and, you know, Peter.
And people were like, oh, Pete Alonso takes it so seriously, and it's like, well, yeah, I mean, first of all, they are playing for $1 million, like, and takes it seriously by now, preparing for doing something that's really hard? Like, what is he supposed to do? Not warm up at all? It's not his fault that the fucking cameras are following him around while he's doing it. They're all doing that, by the way.
Now, granted, maybe he's not taking it as seriously as he did the previous 2 times when, you know, he was winning more than his annual salary. He is now making millions, plural, thank God. But you know what? Like, even with that said, it's the chance to do something 3 times in a row that's never been done before.
Right.
So, yeah, of course he's going to take it seriously. Like, and that's Pete's thing, is, like, he's just so, he's so unpretentious, and he's just so himself, and just so, like, yeah, I really want to win. Like, obviously I do. Like, I don't know. He's so endearing. I just love Pete so much.
And, like, the idea that any of them are not taking it as seriously as him. Like, if they weren't taking it seriously, Julio Rodriguez, he wouldn't have hit fucking 70 home runs. Like, what do people think?
The only one that I will believe if they say they weren't taking it seriously would be Kyle Schwarber.
Oh, my God.
Who lost to, 40... We actually don't know for sure how old he is.
We're not sure.
A 42, 43-year-old Albert Pujols in the first round of the home run derby.
And you know what? Everyone has me to thank for that, because yesterday I had the privilege of being on the Stark Raving Sports. They had like an all-star celebration live YouTube that was all day, a bunch of different people on Foolish Baseball, draft neck Mark, like that Mets fan dude.
Oh, yeah.
And they asked me who I thought was going to win the derby, and I said Schwarber. So it's my fault that he fucking didn't even make it out of the first round versus the 40-ish-year-old Albert Pujols.
And I thought, I was laughing the whole time, like, oh, Pujols is in it? Like, yeah, okay, dude. And even in the beginning of his round, he was struggling. It's like, oh, God, is this guy... My whole thing at the time was like, oh, my God, is this guy going to hit 2 home runs and Schwarber's not going to have to work and this is how Pete's going to lose? No, it turned out Pete had a whole different strategy for losing.
Yeah, he figured it out on his
own.
Honestly,
you can't even be mad, though, because Julio Rodriguez just turned it on. And I mean, hey, not for nothing, the dude's 21. Like,
right.
You can just crank them when you're 21 and bounce right back 15 minutes later. And
what's crazy is that the same thing, like, in 2019 happened to Julio this year. In 2019, when Pete won, Vlad Guerrero set, like, a derby record by hitting, like, 90-something home runs, because in the semifinals, he and Jock Peterson, they went to like 2 or 3 different like swing-offs where they had to have extra time or whatever, and he hit 40 home runs in that round alone.
Right.
So he hit like almost 100 home runs, but because your previous total doesn't matter anymore, he still lost to Pete because it's a bracket style. So the same thing happened to Julio Rodriguez this year, that he hit probably 10 to 15 more home runs than Juan Soto had a hit, but it didn't
altogether,
matter.
Yeah, exactly. He may even kind of figuratively blew his load in the first two rounds. You know, I mean, was it 32 and then 31 or something like that? Like, that's as many home runs as most guys hit the whole thing. So,
and you know what? I'm coming around on the Derby. What's
Andres
the word for
Jimenez
it?
Jimenez strikes out, two outs, top four.
Wait, real quick, Andres Jimenez. Can we talk about Mets fans that are like, oh, is he the one that got away?
Oh, my God, yeah. Like, apparently, as a Mets fan, I'm supposed to be upset that Jimenez is doing well in Cleveland and is an all-star in Cleveland. Even though we got Francisco Lindor, it's like, we're doing fine in the shortstop department, people. Like, I'm not concerned about that. And not for nothing, I mean, okay, I don't have a good perspective on this. I'll grant you that because, you know, Cleveland is my AL team, so I still kind of get to watch Jimenez
and
Rosario too, you know, a couple times a week and enjoy it. But yeah, it's like, listen, Jimenez being good does not make Lindor less good, and he's not as good as Lindor. So what are we even talking about here?
And like, let's see if he can string together a bunch of years of being this good.
Do it again and then do it again, and then, you know, do it again.
Do it to me one more time. And also, that just goes, it's a symptom of the disease that is, like, homegrown is better. And don't get me wrong, the teams that have a great combination of everything, good scouting, good player development, which is their farm system, and also the money to acquire free agents when they need them, those are always the teams that are able to be perennial, right, as far as winning shit.
Right.
But with that being said, because there are so many teams that don't have the money to buy free agents, so they only can depend on homegrown, but they also don't have the development, but that's, you're a casual fan, doesn't realize that.
Right.
So part of the sickness is the thought to love and to be obsessed with homegrown players is so ingrained in, like, the baseball fan's mind that that's a symptom of that sickness, is that Mets fans have been hammered in their head to, like, love and respect homegrown more than anything else. So shouldn't we be ashamed that Jimenez is playing well? Maybe we didn't do the right thing.
As Kirk grounds out to end the fourth. Sorry, I just like doing that commentator shit.
Just practicing.
No, you're right, and we've also talked about, from a psychological standpoint, the endowment effect, that fallacy that people fall into, where if you own something, if something is yours, you overvalue it.
Right.
And even in retrospect, when you get rid of it, it's still like, however well it goes, it's, you know, coulda, woulda, shoulda, that should have been ours, that could have been ours, he could have been doing that for us. It's like, yeah, but again, okay, maybe Lindor struggled a little bit last year. Lindor is having, hey, not for nothing, he was a breaking ball star, okay? Does that mean nothing? Does it mean nothing?
Actually,
I don't know. But no, but he was a boy. On a serious note, Lindor is a borderline all-star. So, like, the fact that Jimenez, who, by the way, is only starting because Altuve is hurt, he was not originally a starter, like, it's so short-sighted. And I'm, you know, I know I'm happy for him because I like the Guardians, and a lot of Mets fans don't feel that way. But yeah, just the extent to which Mets fans are still not happy and appreciative to have Lindor boggles my mind. It's crazy to me. I don't get it. I really don't.
Something I do get, though, is confounding a lot of people. Actually, no, not that many people.
As Sterling K. Brown wraps up this commercial in a coffee house.
Yeah, we just do come with nonstop commentary of even commercials. Oh, that just reminded me. Last night, the first episode of The Captain premiered on ESPN, the Derek Jeter documentary.
Oh, right after the Derby?
The Derby. And it was a very immersive experience in that not only was the entire thing obviously about Derek Jeter, but he was featured in like 70% of the commercials.
Well, that was so funny too, because like it started later than it was supposed to because the Derby ran late, like whatever.
You know, I feel like that was on purpose.
It definitely was. So we're doing our production meeting and, you know, it just comes on right after the Derby. You don't have to change channels, so we know we're watching it. And I look at Emily, I'm like, how long is this? And she's like, I don't know, like probably like an hour. I'm like, okay. I didn't make it through the whole thing. I went home and then I looked. It's 7 hours long. Yeah. 7 hours on Derek Jeter? Yo, listen, Derek Jeter, obviously an all-time great player, but like Derek Jeter is not Michael Jordan. I'm sorry. He's just not.
Yeah, I love Derek Jeter. And as a Yankee fan, I'm obviously going to watch every episode and probably enjoy it because it's just going to be a Yankee love fest. And that being said, it is very much like, this guy that you've already thought had, like, the perfect life, his life is even more perfect than you could possibly imagine. Like,
but
there's
have
no
you
adversity.
Heard in detail how good it was?
What's funny is that, like, yeah, actually, I have heard in detail because I did read his book that was called Derek Jeter, The Life You Imagined.
Episode 5 is just an hour about the gift baskets.
I fucking hope so. I mean, the best part of the documentary, you know, the first portion of some of these docs are always a little dry because it's like about their childhood and like his parents.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You got to set it up. And, right.
Once they started getting into, like, this one basically ended at the end of the 1995 season where they lost in that walk-off of Game 5 in the ALDS to the Seattle Mariners.
Yes.
So, like, now the next few episodes are probably going to be pretty fucking good because now it's like, okay.
Now it's heating up finally, yeah.
Yeah, we're starting in 1996 where he wins a Rookie of the Year, they win the World Series, and the rest is history.
That's like in the Jordan documentary when they're like, you know, when entering the 90s, it's like, okay, here
finally,
we go.
Finally,
like,
okay, now let's do this.
As Trey Turner pops out into foul ground for one out, bottom four.
We actually skipped right over. So Juan Soto, we mentioned, had won the Home Run Derby. He this week rejected a contract offer from the Nationals for 15 years, $440 million. That works out to be about $29 million average annual value. And honestly, he was right to fucking turn it down. Absolutely.
The dude's going to get a $500 million deal. And it's going to be from the Mets, the Yankees, the Dodgers, somewhere up there. He by all accounts, was not happy that that got leaked. Apparently, that was Washington's doing. I also read a story that said that Washington didn't charter a flight for him to the All-Star game. So he got there like 5 hours after everybody else.
That just reminded me, as far as leaks and stuff like that go.
Right.
So last week we had mentioned about Doug Gottlieb, the ESPN reporter who I think usually reports on basketball, having that tweet about Casey Close, the former representative
for Freddie Freeman.
Right. And we had mentioned last week how convenient that literally no one else has talked about it. It's never been brought up again.
Right, yeah. One source, yeah.
Except right after we released the episode. Now, normally I would say this is like a little bit of like Breaking Ball's curse-ish. Mm-hmm. But in a schadenfreude way, on my part anyway, the very next day, Casey Close and XL Management fucking sued Doug Gottlieb, like, officially in court.
Which I think you mentioned that last time, didn't you, that they were threatening to do that?
Yeah, because that was the only other thing that we heard about it from, like, anyone.
Right,
was just Gottlieb had that tweet, and then XL Management tweeted, like, we vehemently deny this, and we are going to fucking sue you if you don't delete the tweet. He never did. No one ever mentioned it again beyond reporting on the tweet.
Right.
Except for this now. And Braves fans are still on some, like, I think, why would he fire him? It's like,
because
people fire people? Like, you really think that that...
Well, and again, I think crazy. That's another symptom of, like, people think that it's so different from a workplace that they're used to. And it's really not on that level. You know what I mean? Like, the stuff that they do performance-wise is totally different. But behind the scenes, it's an office. You know what I mean? And that kind of bullshit happens. And it's not above that. As Wilson Contreras gets on first, as Jose Ramirez fucking boots it at third.
I absolutely love that the Contreras brothers are not only on the All-Star team together, but they are back-to-back in the lineup. And I love that their first names are so similar that they have to go to the fifth letter in order to differentiate.
I saw that. Yeah, that's good.
Back to Soto real quick. So now, of course, and it behooves the Nats to release that news, right? That they offered him something because they don't want it to look like they didn't offer him anything and then all of a sudden they fucking trade him in a few weeks.
I guess so, yeah.
I mean, it's going to take a haul, to say the least, because it's not like he's a rental where he only has a half year left of arbitration. He has 2.5 years of control left before he reaches free agency. Obviously, it's going to be like a Lindor situation where wherever he goes, there's going to be some, like, your guys are going to extend me, right? That'll probably be the team he ends up then signing with. But, like, you still get 2.5 years of fucking Soto if you don't, which is insane.
And I read something that said that they might be now tying Patrick Corbin to that deal just to try and, like, get rid of some dead weight, you know. Almost just like the blinding brilliance of Soto, and they could just, like, sneak him in the periphery. Like, hey, you don't see this guy, right?
Like, listen, you can go play with your friends, but just let your little brother come too. And it's like, oh, fine. Patrick Corbin, he got down in the sweepstakes for him in 2019, or before 2019 season, because he was a free agent at the same time as Manny Machado and Bryce Harper.
As Albert Pujols flies out to Andrew Benintendi.
John is going to use this as a tape to like try out for for fucking announcer jobs.
I'm loving this. I'm like half the time just waiting for like, okay, when would the opening be for like that Howie Rose would try and stick that in.
So his deal that he signed was before 2019. And granted, he had a good season, a great season in 2019, arguably his best season of his career.
Right.
The Nationals won a World Series and they wouldn't have without him.
True.
He's been fucking awful.
Well, I was going to say that doesn't mean much because you could say the same about Soto and Scherzer and, you know, they're in full rebuild mode.
That's true. And he's fucking terrible. And listen, I'll kill Cashman and Steinbrenner and the Yankees as much as the next person when it comes to like cheaping out. I'm still bitter that they didn't get Machado or Harper that year. I mean, granted, we got Gerrit Cole in that December. So like, I can't complain that much, but they could have gotten both of them or all of them, whatever, that aside.
Greedy.
I'm kidding. Well, yeah. I'm so fucking glad that they didn't get Corbin in 2019 because he was originally, he went to Yankee Stadium, did the whole nine. You know, like when they like boil it down to their like, okay, I'm going to choose between these three teams. And then the team like rolls out the red carpet for them and their wife.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Shit.
You get your presentation and everything. And yeah, yeah.
He got to that point with the Yankees because I remember seeing like the screenshots of like, welcome to Yankee Stadium, Patrick Corbin. They have like the picture of them and the Yankee hat and shit like they do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Yankee fans were clamoring for him because at that point they hadn't signed Gerrit Cole, so it was like, we need an ace.
You need the pitching, right.
Fucking thank God they didn't sign that.
We
bump.
Need an ace, Patrick Corbin.
He was an ace for one season and then that was it.
Oh my God, that's funny.
Actually, that's not fair. He was good in Arizona. That's how he was able to get that deal.
Right.
But talk about falling off a fucking cliff.
And Jock Peterson strikes out to end the fourth. The whole time that was Paul Blackburn pitching, but it just never came up because I don't really know who he is.
Who?
Thank you. He's on the A's. Oh, no, well, that makes sense. He's the, hey, we got to send somebody from every team. Who can we get on the A's with an excuse to go to the All-Star game?
And that's true. There are a few pitchers that I just don't really recognize their names because they're from teams like the A's.
Right.
Except I do recognize the All-Star for the Diamondbacks. His last name is Mantiply, and it just, that is the creepiest fucking last name.
Well, I do say it always makes me feel better when you also don't recognize a player. Then I'm like, oh, okay, good. Okay, cool.
So last week we had mentioned how Chris Sale had that fucking meltdown in the the clubhouse for the minor league team. And everyone was like, oh, he's so competitive, blah, blah, blah. We obviously called him out on being a fucking tool bag.
Yeah.
So this past weekend, the Yankees, they took on the Red Sox right before the break. Yankees took 2 out of 3. Crushed them in one of the games. I mean, the fact that Red Sox fans really thought that, like, oh, this is the rivalry's back because they split the weekend before is a fucking hilarious joke. That aside, and I never root for any sort of injury, and I don't in this case either. I would never want Chris Sale to get hurt at all or any player to get hurt. He got his fucking pinky smashed on a 110 mile per hour comebacker off the bat of Aaron Hicks, and he just immediately walked off the field. And listen,
hey, it can be karmically funny without having rooted for it.
Yes. Like, I even said it in one of the group chats that I was in on Twitter, is that, like, wow, color me shocked that the guy who acts like a fucking total tool bag and does it totally unapologetically has a lot of bad things happen to him. I mean, granted, I'm saying that lightly. It's bad as an athlete, obviously, but he still is a fucking multi-millionaire and signed that contract that's guaranteed money. So his life is set no matter what. But still, like, maybe he can try being less of a shitbag and maybe he'll have better luck. Because that's just bad luck, getting hit by a fucking comebacker like that. That's
it
all
is.
It is.
And you notice he really went out of his way to hold up the finger to make everybody, so we could all see it, make sure everybody knew why he was coming out, because otherwise we would not have believed him that he didn't get pulled for something else and then just punched the concrete wall and broke his finger.
Yeah, he's like, for the record, I broke this before I'm destroying the away clubhouse going into right now.
Now, something else worth mentioning. I know that we are loath to pat ourselves on the back here at Breaking Balls, but we did a pretty solid job with our Breaking Ball stars in that several of them are now actual all-stars. Like, I know we both picked Freddie Freeman. He got the promotion.
Ty France,
who, he was one of the biggest kind of like recognized snubs all around that he should have made it. So that was good to see.
Corey Seager also, which he kind of, I use the term controversially is doing a lot of work in this sentence, but he was controversially picked before Ty France as like a fill-in, because I forget who got injured. It was not Altuve at that point. It was, I forget who,
yeah,
who
but
bowed
is there
out.
Any,
oh, Trout.
Was there anybody else on the Rangers, though? Or was Seager like the, yeah, you're our guy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Seager was the guy.
It's
That's
be, right.
right. Yeah. And then they had Ty France after that. He finally got put in. I think, I don't know who he was replacing either. It could have been him replacing Trout, or I'm not sure. Doesn't matter.
Oh, no, no. We're not concerned with who got bumped from the All-Star team. We're concerned in validating ourselves with who we picked got promoted.
I know. Usually, like, I feel like there's a lot of Breaking Balls curse-ish shit that's happening, and it's in our favor this time, though. Where, like,
right.
things that we've said will happen or should happen are actually happening. Is this a new turn of events for Breaking Balls?
Everything's coming up Breaking Balls.
Oh, look at, I love Poppy. Why do they, I get why they have him in, like, the MLB, the Rob Lowe MLB hat, but, like, God, that thing is fucking ugly. Like, just give him a logo.
Is it ironic at this point, or, I guess, okay, I'll say, I guess better that than, like, a Fox logo, you know?
Oh, my God.
There's a lot going on that hat. Does he have, like, a camera on it?
Yeah,
on
they just showed, like, the view from the camera.
Poppy cam?
Poppy cam. Dude, during so, I can't believe that this got passed. I assume what was a design team, then more people approved it before it hit the air. During the Yankees-Red Sox series, when they play it on Fox on Saturday, you know how, like, in between innings, Fox will have, like, images that have, like, the team logos or whatever?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh,
dude,
wait, I know what you're about. Yeah, okay.
They had one that was the Red Sox B logo and the Yankees NY logo in the two squares at ground zero.
In the memorial pool.
In
the
memorial
Twin Towers
pools.
Once stood.
Who the fuck approved this? Like, it is so
tone-deaf,
it's insane.
I don't even know what to say. It's, well, you know, okay, here's my question. How much of it was because one of the teams was Boston? Like, if they do that with the Mets and the Yankees, is it the same level of outrage?
I think so.
Yeah?
I definitely think so.
Straight up tone-deaf.
Yeah, because it's like, there are so many, like, iconic things in New York that they can do some cheesy graphic on.
Right, put the Statue of Liberty in a hat or something.
A few, last year they had a weird, like, 1998 3D graphic video cartoon of King Kong climbing up the Empire State Building. Like, you do that, you took the time to do that, and this is what you slapped on this broadcast?
That is the funniest thing, though, is, like, even if it was just some intern, so a couple people had to say yes to that.
Yeah, and I got news for you. It definitely wasn't an intern. This was a legit graphics team that was like,
no.
Listen, let's put our heads together.
Right, yeah. See, next week they have it like, they just like dive down below the ocean and you come up on the Titanic. And the Titanic's got like a logo on each side for the two teams that are playing.
Like, I mean, no,
zoom in on the USS Arizona.
Yeah, they just do it on all these fucking memorials for these horrible events in every city they
just
go to.
Double down.
That's really funny. Oh, shit. Castillo is up. Hopefully, Castillo...
More importantly... Yeah, no, I am going to interrupt you. More importantly, Pete Alonso is in at first base.
Oh, thank God.
That's what's really important, as Castillo strikes out Kyle Tucker. Two outs, top five.
And hopefully that is what we're hearing from a broadcaster in a Yankees Astros ALCS, and Luis Castillo is pitching for the New York Yankees. Like, people are obviously hot under the collar thinking that, like, this is a pipe dream. People thinking the Yankees are going to get Juan Soto. There's no chance of that happening. Like, I feel like the chance is very slim, but I feel like Castillo is a real target that may actually happen.
ALCS, zoom in on the ruins of Waco. Astros logo emerges.
If they don't do this, I'm going to be disappointed.
It's like, you made your choice. Now fucking do it. Like, come on.
Yeah, we got to stick with this bit. I don't know who they'll trade for him. I would imagine, because that's the thing. Obviously, people are like, oh, they're going to be asking too much. And it's like, well, yeah, obviously, the asking prices are always pretty high because they know that the teams that are looking to acquire pieces are desperate because they're going to make a run.
Right. And that's the big thing I keep hearing from Mets fans is like, anybody but Alvarez. You can't touch Alvarez. It's like, listen.
Do you want to win now or what?
And that's it. It's like, you know, Alvarez could be a generational talent. It's like, Soto is a proven generational talent. Like, stop prospect hugging. Like,
right.
Let's win. Let's go. Because, you know, if it's going to be one of those things like, yeah, okay, if it doesn't work, then, you know, we can criticize. I should have, would have, could have, whatever. If they pull the trigger on that, you know, empty the farm, whatever, and it works, and the Mets get their first World Series championship since 1986, no regrets at all.
And also, like, think about how, because this is my thing with, and obviously the Yankees have the room right now in terms of, like, in their division.
Right.
the assumption people are really horny to like bring up Peraza, bring up Cabrera, bring up Volpe. Like they're ready. Like they can test him out because IKF is obviously he's not the best shortstop in the world.
He's not the shortstop of the future.
No, not even fucking close. The defensive specialist, as we were sold, that fucking makes an error every single fucking game, it seems like. So people are really horny to, like, pull up these other shortstops that the Yankees have in the system that we are basically waiting for. That's why they skipped on this class.
Azariah strikes out swinging to end the fifth. Sorry, mid-fifth.
He's rusty, folks. Don't worry. This is the first time.
This is the first game I'm calling all year.
So people are always really horny to, like, bring up these prospects, but, like, how often do prospects work out and play really well immediately?
Right. Well, that's
does that ever happen?
Well, that's even like with the draft. The Mets took a catcher with either their first or second pick, and everyone's been like, oh, okay, Alvarez to the Nationals. It's like, none of these guys might work out. We have no idea. That's why prospect hugging is so weird to me. Even weirder, like, so like they had the draft up against nothing. They had no games on last night. And these are guys that, if we see them at all, we're going to see them in 5-6 years. Meanwhile, the futures game, guys that we could ostensibly see in a year or two, no, let's have competition, though. Like, you know, your team's game is going to be on, so you got to choose what you got to watch. Like, what are they doing, man?
And also, it was, like, on Peacock, too. It's
right,
like,
yeah, not even accessible.
Classic MLB. And on that note, let's get right into the voicemails. Our first voicemail is from Quinn.
Hey, it's Quinn. So I know you guys love the Central Divisions a lot, so to figure talk about that a little bit. So yeah, the Brewers are pretty good this year, even though, but they also have like one of the tougher schedules the second half, which is something that fans of fringe playoff teams say to cope. And also Josh Hader just had like the worst blown saves have been a stat. And also, if this gives you any indication of how good things are going, the Pirates are currently in third. And in just over 3 weeks, we've got the Field of Dreams game against the fourth and fifth place Cubs and Reds, who are both more than 20 games below 500. So that's going to be a big draw. Oh, right. And also, going back to what I was saying about not liking the Phillies last week, so Schwarber goes into the home run derby leading the National League in home runs and loses to 44-year-old Albert Pujols. I don't know how that's even possible, but anyways. And then also, All-Star game tonight, or when I'm calling at least. AL's probably going to win since they've won like the last 10 years. Also, I'm thankful that the home field advantage in the World Series rule is gone because I don't know what Bud Selig was dreaming of there. He was mad that it was a tie in the Brewers stadium, so he decided to implement like the worst rule that he could have imagined. But yeah, the home run derby and extra innings, that's actually kind of fun. I kind of like that.
MLB, once again, just shooting itself in the foot with forcing themselves to, like, let's have all the old teams do the Field of Dreams first. Like, as if everyone didn't know that the Cubs and the Reds were both going to be dog shit this season.
As Nestor Cortez walks Pete Alonso, that actually didn't just happen, I just wanted to say it. I actually had just written down that, like, if they were smart, they would make that stupid cornfield game flexible. Go into the season TBA. Same way that, like, depending how the season goes, they have the flexibility to change a night to a Sunday night game or, you know, a Friday night game. Do that with the corn game. You know, teams have games scheduled that, you know, a couple months into the season, pick your teams.
The merch might be a problem, though, getting the unis.
Oh, I know they can't actually do it. But, you know, like, if there was a way to do that, or, you know what, abandon that whole thing and just do the All-Star game and all that shit. Home run derby in the cornfield.
That's not a bad idea.
It's like a Little League park anyway. You know they're going to bring the juiced balls to Iowa regardless, so why not use them for an exhibition game like this instead of one that counts?
Oh, I bet you the people who live in that town would fucking hate that.
Oh, absolutely.
Actually, though, I guess what's the difference? Well, no, because you would have to open it up to more than like 3,000 fans to be able to see. That's the coolest part of the cornfield game.
Well, oh, yeah. The answer to why they're not doing all of the things that I just said is money.
Right. Well, yeah.
Make
at the
no
end
mistake.
Of the day, believe it or not, it is a business. Yeah, I mean, Quinn, the Central League is fucking terrible. And I agree that the fucking home run derby to settle a tie in the All-Star game as opposed to just ending in a tie is obviously way better. I feel like they should be doing that instead of the Ghost Runner. I would much prefer a totally by chance home run derby. Yeah. That would piss me off way more. But just like maybe pepper one in every few
just
weeks.
Just do, I mean, they could.
It doesn't have to be every time.
It doesn't have to be nuts. Just do it with like each team picks their guy. You get three. Like, you don't even have to do like, you know, a 30 home run derby. Just like, you know, first to two, first to three, you know, something like that.
First to three, it
would be more fun.
It would be.
It would be stupid because I always criticize sports that come down to a skills competition. Yes. To settle ties. So it's perfect for an exhibition, not for a game that actually matters.
It would be kangaroo court.
Right. The fact they finally embraced it, you know. We do have to give MLB credit for their occasional W's, rare though they may be.
And speaking of rare, I'm glad actually that we came to this during this voicemail, but we would be remiss if we didn't touch on the fact that our dear commissioner, Manfred, he was asked straight up by Hannah Kaiser about minor leaguers making, you know, the fact that they don't make a living wage. Like, basically, like, what do you have to say about that? And he was like, I push back at the idea that they don't make a living wage. Like, a guy who's making $17 million a year really is like, what, $10,000 a year is a living wage?
You know what he did? He literally did the Lucille Bluth.
I don't understand the question, and I won't respond to it.
I don't understand the question, and I refuse to answer.
And also a little bit of Lucille Bluth in,
I mean, it's one banana, Michael. What could it cost? $10?
How much could a banana cost anyway? $10?
Right.
Quinn, thank you so much for your voicemail. So our next voicemail is from a phone number that I don't recognize, so it could be a new caller. Usually we listen to our voicemails and go through it before we record, but obviously tonight literally everything is off the cuff, almost exactly off the cuff. Exactly, that's like two opposites. You can't be exact and off the cuff.
I mean, we're also both wearing short sleeve shirts right now, so.
Wow, that was painful.
My name is Mike Nelson. I am at MD Nelly. My question is, as we go into the second half, what does John think the biggest threat to the Mets is? Does he think it's themselves or does he think it's the Braves? And then my comment is, and it's also in the form of a question, in Emily's video debut the other day, I seem to feel like she was telling John she could do a show without him and maybe breaking balls would be changed to breaking John's balls. Just a question. Bye.
Mike, actually, you'll be really happy to hear this since he commented on my video about the fact that I didn't smoke a blunt during that recording. The reason that I forgot that you had told me that you had left this voicemail and acted like I was clueless is because we've been smoking as we've been recording this. So I was like, I have no idea who this is. And then I was like, oh, wait, he told me he was going to call in.
Right. Mike, as far as your question about the Mets, I think that, well, I've been asked a few times over the last couple months, what do I think the Mets are going to do with the trade deadline? And I kind of stalled a little bit in those answers, but I think it's crystallized a little bit more what we need to do. We need a DH. We very clearly need a bat. So I think that the answer to your question goes two directions. One is, if the Mets do make moves that they need to make, pretty much after the All-Star break coming up in the trade deadline, and again, that's mainly to get a DH, maybe bolster the bullpen a little bit, then I think it's themselves that could potentially be their own worst enemy. If they don't do those things and they rely on what's gotten them to this point, I'm definitely concerned about the Braves at that point.
Especially since DeGrom is like kind of still hurt.
Right. Yeah. You know, DeGrom, they're saying, is supposed to start against the Yankees next week, fingers crossed. But now he's got some more mild shoulder soreness. His start got pushed back by a day, his rehab start. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, so it's become clear that the Mets, you know, though very good, definitely need some help. And I think that the front office has intimated in some way that they're aware of that and that they're on it. So, you know, again, we have no reason not to have faith in this front office at the way they've performed the last couple of years. So I think that they know that we need the help. So I think it depends what they do. It's either themselves or the Braves, depending what version of the Mets we see a month from now.
And as far as my video, yeah, I was calling out John. No, just kidding. No, I wasn't. But I do like the idea of like a series of videos where I just get high and then just roast John, even though he's not here with me.
See, breaking John's balls was like the theme of that phone call. So.
Mike, thank you so much for your call, and thank you to all of our callers. You guys are awesome. Anyone else listening wants to get in on the fun, feeling brassy, give the Breaking Balls Hotline a call. 631-820-7377. So as the All-Star game is winding down, this episode is winding down, the first half has officially wound down. And I know we skipped over June Bozos because DJ Bingington and I were moving. And we're not going to go back. What's done is done. But we
Plus we know none of you care. So
that's true. But what we are going to do are our first half Bozos. John, would you like to kick us off?
Yeah, so my first half Bozo, it's a team, actually. And collectively, it's the California Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, California Los Angeles Angels.
Yeah,
no,
it's
the Angels. Yo, the Angels looked like, and this is the team who perennially we dunk on, and deservedly so, because they have Shohei Ohtani and they have Mike Trout, and they cannot, for the life of them, even just make the playoffs. No. Maybe this year, with the new format, you know, they got that extra team coming in, they have a shot. And we thought that in the beginning of the year. Through May 24th, they started out the season 27-17, 10 games over. They were one game out of first. And then the next 48 games, they kicked off with a 14-game losing streak and have gone 12-36 since that start. They currently sit at 39-53. They're 21 games behind the Astros, sitting in fourth place. They just cannot get their shit together. They have the tools. There's no reason why somebody, those two play, and I know baseball, yes, you know, side note, we know baseball is one of those where, okay, one player doesn't make as much of a difference as like in basketball or hockey. Granted, you should not be in fourth place with those guys on your team. You just shouldn't. And Mike Trout is just going to waste away out there. And, you know, it's so funny because, like, Mike Trout is really doing what everybody thought that Manny Machado was going to be doing. It's like, oh, I'm going to San Diego, never hear from him again. Mike Trout we only hear of because he's so good and because, you know, he fucks with the MVP and All-Star games.
And because it's always so sad.
It's so sad. And it's just like, you know, every year I want the Mets to win, you want the Yankees to win. It's to the point where, like, I would give up one of those years. Like, just give the Angels one. Give Shohei one. Give Trout one. Like, my God. First half Bozos, the Los Angeles, California Angels of Anaheim, California, Los Angeles Angels of California.
That was perfect segue for mine because my first half Bozo is also a team, the Toronto Blue Jays. There is a lot of baseball left to be played, but
a whole half of baseball, one could
argue. Yeah, a whole half. And I didn't go back to listen to what my preseason predictions were, but I'm pretty sure I predicted the Blue Jays to win the division. Me and everyone else on the fucking planet, even the Blue Jays themselves. I mean, it was Vlad Guerrero Jr. who famously said, last year was the trailer, this year was going to be the movie. This is the longest movie of all time. This is like in The Hobbit where it takes him an hour until he's like, I'm going on an adventure. It's like, is that this
it's
kind
like
of movie?
Next year's the movie and the movie gets like 20% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, like they are, as it stands now, in third place in the AL East. They're 14 and a half games back. They are a game and a half behind the Rays, who are in second place. They are not getting a wild card, so I don't think they're in a wild card spot right now. I'm pretty sure that means, wait, that's their division. I, like, can't read these wild card standings on Baseball Reference. I have to go to MLB.com for this.
Well, to be fair, it's kind of tough to say that any AL East team is out of the wild card spot.
That's
when
true.
Everybody's and over probably, 500 and, you know.
And they probably aren't. I'm pulling up.
Probably at least been a couple games, I would think.
I'm pulling up the standings now. The MLB.com standings are way more reader-friendly for people like me. Okay, they have the third wild card spot. So they
do,
right
okay.
Now, yeah, right now they are in that third spot.
The sympathy spot.
The Mariners, who have been on a nice little run, I think
yes,
right before the wild card break.
13 or 14 in a row, something like that.
Right, the All-Star break. Yeah, they won like a whole shitload in a row.
Yeah.
Good for them, man. I would like the Mariners to make a little run at it. Imagine they beat the Astros.
We just want, well, you know what? I think like the AL West is one of those divisions where we just don't give a shit. So it's like, yeah, let them win. Sure. It'd be fun.
One of my favorite accounts on Twitter, Ephus Officer, the other day, he said, I forget what the conversation was. It was about like the AL West. Oh, when they said that the three representatives for the AL, if the game were to tie, that are going to do the derby at the end.
Right.
It was like Julio Rodriguez, Kyle Tucker, and I forget who the other person was. And I wrote, like, haha, good joke, like, who's actually doing it? This was before Julio Rodriguez went off in the real derby.
Right, right.
So then Ephus Saucer, who is an Astros fan, he, like, replied, like, oh, the AL West, like, you're just not, you just can't handle AL West supremacy or something like that. And I was like, that is a sentence that has never been said. I'm pretty sure you just woke up a sleeper agent somewhere because that is just one of those things that you never thought you'd ever hear.
just don't understand that we want the other AL West teams to win because they're not the Astros.
But there was no way for me to give a first half bozo to anyone besides the Blue Jays. I mean, they've been a letdown to themselves, their fans, the entire league, every person who ever made a prediction about who was going to do what this season, everybody. It's been pretty bad. I mean, the Yankees have been unreal, but Jesus, they wouldn't even be in second. Like, it's not like, oh, if you don't count the Yankees, they'd be in first place. Like, no, right, they right. still wouldn't be.
Even with that. This is John Snyder imitating Howard Cosell as Kyle Schwarber grounds out to begin the bottom of the seventh. We sign off on this, the 110th episode of Breaking Balls from sunny Los Angeles, by which I mean dark, humid Long Island, New York. M, a word in edgewise.
We are, like John said, in the bottom of the seventh of the All-Star game. We obviously aren't going to sit here and just like do commentary for the rest of the game. If for no other reason, we're going to continue to get more high. So like it would go beyond the game and then just never end. We get to a point where we're like, how do we end this? And we're an hour from now.
Right.
So that about wraps it up for episode 110. We want to thank all of our listeners. You guys are awesome. And of course, our callers. Anyone else listening wants to get in on the fun? Feeling brassy? Give the Breaking Balls hotline a call, 631-820-7377. You can also find us on Twitter, at BreakBallsPod. And we want to thank our amazing producer and engineer, DJ Bingington. You can find him on Twitter as well, at DJ BingingTon. And we will catch you guys next week.
You know, as a head without a body, I envy the dead.
No argument here.